Guys, I sighted the microphone from the green light to the speed trap. Ray Garino and Jody calls them as they see them, and you better believe them. Here, relevant news, biased opinion, and outright nonsense regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gas! With mechanical trickery never before broadcast over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrill to the explosive tension as Ray and Joe cuss each other down track. Barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain bastards as they shake hands with the devil. All that and so much more at high noon this Sunday on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and the Live Eat, Ray Garino and Joe D. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free every Sunday at noon on WHBC. Take the Hempstead Turnpike to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway sign. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Even!
I'm a charger that charges through the night like an orange bolt of lightning passing everything in sight. I'm the best pal the Duke boys ever had. I'm thunder on the highway looking bad, bad, bad. I'm a knight.
And you are looking bad, bad, bad because you are on with Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show. Here to take care of all your concerns and repair issues and any other things that you have going on. And we're playing Johnny Cash today because we're going to be talking Mopars again. Yes, we're back to good old Mopar Mouth Radio. We're going to have Mr. Tony D'Agostino from Tony's Parts on. And we do also have, remotely, Mr. Chris Switzer. Chris, are you with us? I do not hear Chris. Nope, I don't. Yeah, okay, we're pushing. There we go. Chris, are you with us? All right.
Hello.
You know, you got to see what's going on. I got Rob and Kim flanking me. Everybody's pushing buttons, sliding things. We got stuff flying all over the place. It's a mess in here.
I can hear it. I can, through the miracle of technology, I'm watching your desktop.
You're watching the desktop?
Yes, good. I can see your desktop on my phone.
Which desktop? Because we're trying to figure out which camera is live in the studio. What is it exactly that you see?
I see a Windows. It looks like a Windows desktop.
Oh, that's probably the computer we're on. He sees a Windows desktop. Okay,
yes.
We're playing around. You know, there's like cameras everywhere. We don't know which one will work with Skype on that computer. So bear with us.
I'm glad I'm watching myself.
Well, at least somebody is. So bear with us.
That's not a problem.
And let me let everybody know that you can call us for a little while at least, 516-572-7440. Follow us on social media, please, on the web. It's motormouthradio.com. We're also Motormouth Radio on Twitter and on Facebook. And on Joe's favorite, of course, Instagram, where real underscore Motormouth Radio. Right. And that's where we post all of our pictures and things that we get involved with during the week. And yeah, and we're going to see some of Chris's stuff soon, I hope, too. We'll get some of that going on. So, you know what? Here we go. And we do have a call. So we're going to push this button, push that button, say, hi, you're out with the Motor Mouths.
Hey, Ray, it's Mike. How are you? Hey, Chris.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
How are you doing?
How are you, brother?
How are you?
Doing well. Yeah, we're doing all good. How are you?
Good. Calling from the Catskills. Ray had sent me a nice email with a little diagnostic I could run on the Chevelle. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting in it, and it's running right now.
Excellent. So tell people what the problem was, Mike, because no one else knows except you and I what the heck was going on.
Well, the thing that was going on, it was my dad tried to start it. It was running. I think he said it was running rough, and then he had a lot of trouble starting it, and it was just not really running good. The car never missed a beat in all of its life that it spent with my dad, and all of a sudden it started running weird. So I talked to Ray. Ray sent me a good email loaded with stuff, and I just started with the stupid easy stuff. I got a can of carb cleaner, sprayed the carb down inside, let it sit overnight, and this morning I came out, pulled the wires off the distributor, make sure they were all good. You know, you said check, make sure they're all contacting, did that, and dropped some starter fluid in there, and bang, it fired right up.
Excellent. Oh, excellent.
And what kind of cloud of smoke came out of the back of that thing?
A lot of smoke.
So, yeah, now I'm a little perplexed because we were thinking about points being an issue, maybe closing or being crudded up or, you know, maybe a bad condenser. And my thought was, the more I thought of it, the more I thought the fuel pump probably crapped out, because that happens now with old, you know, with the ethanol and the gas.
But, yeah. That, I mean, luckily I put starch on in it, so hopefully that saved it. And, you know, we're sitting here running, we're idling good, so it's doing real good.
Excellent. Good old StarTron. Kim found a camera. Excellent. Well, that's good. So now you get to rub it in your dad's nose and say, there was nothing wrong with that car, Dad. What are you talking about? Come on.
Yeah, right. Maybe I, you know, made a better connection on one of the wires or something when I pulled them off. I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, when stuff like that happens, sometimes, Mike, there's really no explanation. Other than you take it apart, you fiddle with it, you put it back together, and next thing you know, you're done.
That sounds like life.
Exactly.
What did Mike Sims say, Chris? He says, you know, you take it apart, you fix it, you go to the deli, you buy a sandwich, you come back, it's fixed.
You come back, it's fixed. I like what Mikey T used to say. It's the last thing you touched.
Well, yes.
Whatever it was.
We still preach that here on Motor Mouth Radio, because that usually is exactly what it is. The last thing you touched.
No, a lot of times,
Mike, when it's your own car, it's even worse.
Oh, that's for sure. Mikey, was the car sitting for a long period of time? Because you know that...
it was. I think the last time we drove it was in, like, September or October.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Not too long, but cars don't like to sit.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. I actually had to try and start up the 300 in the garage, and I just cranked it a couple of times, and I went, let's not get into a project right now. So I just stopped. Didn't start in a couple of cars. I'm like, I'll go back out there.
We should back up a little so people will know. This is a 72 Chevelle, a small block car, pretty much all stock. So nothing, you know, no mystery here. Just, you know, nothing crazy, no weird aftermarket parts, just the stuff that the general put in it. And this is what happens. You know, this is what goes on when cars do sit and such. So are you taking that, Mike? How much snow do you have up there? Is it, you able to take it out, or do you need chains and plows?
Yeah, well, I think I was going to go down the road and ask for to borrow the neighbor's snow chains to put on the back, but I think he's out right now, so I won't do that. We got about 3 inches up here, so I don't know. I've never driven a rear-wheel drive like this in snow. I'm not going to try it today.
Oh, it's fun.
It's fun. Yeah, you got to do it because that's – listen, with the stuff you drive, the tow trucks and the flatbeds and all the things that you drive, you can handle it.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
No problem whatsoever.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, exactly. No, I don't blame you. You know, it's funny because we had about 3 inches of snow up here, and I was at our local firehouse. I'm actually doing a website for the local firehouse here in the community, and we were discussing it, and it just had started to snow, and the bell started going off, and the chief looks at me and goes, "You want to go on a run?" And I'm like, "What?" Okay. So we hopped in the Suburban, and we were leading the fire truck, and the roads were, like, slipping and sliding all over the place. And he's got a four-wheel drive in the Suburban, and we're just going all over the place, like we were a projectile going down the road. And I'm thinking to myself, I got to go home after we get back, if we make it back from this. But it was just a simple fender bender in an intersection. It wasn't anything bad, no big thing. But I videoed it. That's why I was on the run with them. I had to video the incident for the website, just to throw it on and say, hey, you know, Nichols Fire Department on the job.
Nice.
So, but it was the roads were treacherous yesterday. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, rear wheel drive, four wheel drive, front wheel drive, whatever it was just worth being careful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and Mike, that's the thing. Like Chris and I, you know, we grew up driving rear-wheel drive cars. When I went to front-wheel drive, I had to learn how to drive all over again. Because I was used to controlling the car with the back, and now the front kind of did the steering and the grabbing and pulling you around curves. I had a Honda Accord, a little hatchback, and that thing was like a little goat. I was like, damn, this car really, you know, the first time it pulled me around a corner with bad weather, I was like, I'm kind of impressed.
I remember my first front-wheel drive car was a Chevy Celebrity. It was like an 82 or an 83 Chevy Celebrity. And I loved it. I was totally drawn to four-wheel drive after driving that thing in the snow. Like you said, Ray, it was just like a little billy goat. It was just plowing through everything. I'm like, this is awesome! So much better than the rear-wheel drive in the snow.
Right. Excellent. Well, so Mike, I was thinking you had mentioned that, you know, it was too cold to work out. I guess it's the car's in the house garage, right?
Yes.
Good. So now you know what it's like to work in the shop in the winter.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that freaking place is like an icebox. Poor Derek.
Yeah, well, don't worry. No need to fear. We just ordered a big gas blower heater for the corner, so you'll be nice and toasty whenever
Good
it comes
for
in.
You.
Nice. Yeah, it'll be probably July. But that's okay, because the next winter, I'm all about setting it up for the future. That's excellent.
Exactly.
Very good.
Wow.
All right, so that's good. You had an easy repair, and that means now you can get back to relaxing and just counting down the hours, because I'm sure you're going to be coming back. When are you coming back?
Yeah, this afternoon sometime.
Yeah, very nice. Well, there's no snow down here. We had rain last night. It melted. Done. We're out of it. So
speak for yourself over there.
Yeah, well, listen, you over the bridge. And it's funny because my daughter sent me a text at 10. It was like 10 at night. I'm watching Barrett Jackson like for hours. And now she needs a ride. I had to pick her up at a bar and drop her and bring her back home. Like, okay, let me clean the car, get my shoes on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was a little slushy out, but no big deal. But
yeah, we got the same snow up here, Mike. So I'm sympathizing with you.
Yeah.
Yes. So enjoy your show, and I'm ready for Mopar Motor Radio or whatever you called it, I'll be listening.
All right, Mike. Thanks for the call, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good day, fellas.
All righty.
Take care, my brother. Bye. Bye-bye.
Excellent. That was Mike from Celebrity Chase. He's upstate. And yeah, that was the thing, Chris. You know, we talked about that during the week, and Mike was asking me about, his dad had said the car just didn't run again. And it was a great running car. So Mike had to do some diagnostics. And, he was saying, what do I bring? And I'm like, well, you guys got a lot of tools up there. But we started talking about diagnosing points. And it was great because I said, hey, wait a minute. The distributor we took out of your Pontiac, it's still in the shop, right? I went and grabbed it, brought it in the office. And we had a little lesson on points, having a distributor right in my hand, which was very, very, it was very good, It was nice.
The class is in session.
And by the way, I think you have a cobweb on that floor joist that's over your head.
You're seeing them. Take a look at these things.
Oh, spacious.
Holy smokes.
Beautiful.
Good thing we're not doing Facebook Live. They would see the dungeon that I'm broadcasting here in.
I know.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, if I can bring this whole shebang outside into the garage, well, I'd have frostbite right now, but be a lot better.
Right.
A lot more visually entertaining than not as visually entertaining as your garage, young man.
Oh, well, yeah.
Where every square inch of your garage is filled with some sort of automobilia or life experiencing thing hanging from the rafters.
I just talked to someone about that. Where was I? Just recently, and we were talking about. Oh, I know. I was in the Snap-on truck on Thursday.
Of course you were.
And we were. Yeah, we were talking. Bill was telling me how a guy came over to his house to buy. He sells memorabilia, gas pumps, and signs and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And he was saying how this guy was just looking all over the place and just wasn't paying attention to the conversation. I said, listen, people do that at my house, and I'm in a smaller space, just a car. But you know what it is? When you're in a new space, you want to take it all in because it's all new,
Right, sure. So. Oh, I have seen, being in your garage as a guest, as an outsider, someone that doesn't look in the garage every single day, I've stood there and watched people walk in your garage with mouth open, eyes like just feeding all of that sensory into their head, and they're just like in awe of what you have just to be seen. Everything is displayed.
Yeah.
Everything is pointing at you, looking back in your garage. Yeah.
It's cool because, let's face it, it's all car stuff. So it's the stuff that we all, we're all kind of, taken in by that stuff. So that's, it's cool. It's cool.
My garage is starting to do that. You know what I'm doing now? How many boxes? Maybe you don't have it, but I know I have a ton of boxes of things that were in blister packs, things that you found on a wall hanging on a card. I threw them all together when we made the big move up here, and they're in a box.
Oh, yeah.
And every once in a while I come across one. So what I do is I have a bag of nails, and I just take a nail, I go right up to the garage wall, bunk, 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 with a hammer, and hang it.
Nice.
And I've been slowly filling up wall space in my garage, but now it looks like a small hardware store or auto parts store.
So the bag of nails can go with the box of rocks that you keep. So,
in my head.
Right. All right, Chris. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take our first break, and then we should be back with Mr. Tony D'Agostino from Tony's Parts. And so we'll take care of a little bit of business here, and then we'll be back. So you stay where you are. Keep those rafters clean.
Mm.
And, I'll push the buttons and slide the things here, and then we'll be right back on 90.3 WHPC.
Sounds good.
WHPC wants to let you know that the Nassau Community College Africana Studies and Theater and Dance Department production present Sisters on Fire, a musical by Professor Marcia McNair and Professor Anissa Moore. In Sisters on Fire, a musical, the personal becomes the political when passionately opinionated African-American women speak their minds in a soul-stirring mix of song, dance, spoken word poetry, and prose. The interrelated dramatic monologues examine pressing social issues from an African-American female perspective. Presented on Nassau Community College's Main Stage Theater inside Building W with performances January 24th through February 2nd. Ticket and show information can be found by calling 516-572-7676. This portion of programming on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by the Center for Workforce Development at Nassau Community College, where you can learn how to become a phlebotomy technician. In a 90-hour program at Nassau Community College, students will be taught aspects related to blood collection and develop comprehensive skills to perform venipunctures for lab analysis. Class includes lecture, demonstration, and hands-on practice. Employment opportunities exist in doctor offices, hospitals, diagnostic offices, and labs. The course begins February 10th and concludes May 20th with classes conducted evenings. More information can be found by calling the Center for Workforce Development at 516-572-7487 or by visiting ncc.edu.
This is Dennis Pitzenberger from Sticker Shock, and if you're not listening to Motormouth Radio, boy, you are lost in the smoke of the burnout. Make sure to tune in each and every week because these guys are exactly what you want to hear. Real car guys, real talk, every single weekend.
Yeah, how about that? We just hit that one right on the post there at the end of the song on Motormouth Radio. Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer from the basement.
Hi.
Hi. You having a good time over there or what?
I'm looking at Tony D'Agostino's Facebook site here.
Okay.
It's pretty cool.
I think I saw his Facebook thing last night and I was looking. But Tony's Parts is his website. So that's his main site. So that's where you can go.
Yeah, I went right to stalking him.
Okay. Yeah, good.
I went right for the stalker mode. That's what I did.
Excellent.
It looks good.
While we're waiting for Tony, let me take care of another piece of business. I can't hold this up so you can read it. You won't see it through the camera, but
you're like a little postage stamp on my phone.
Yes.
Little tiny postage stamp I can see.
We like it that way. But yeah, hopefully you'll see the phone light. So anyway, Wednesdays at 6 p.m., you should tune into this station and listen to Rock Overdose. Because you can never truly overdose on rock music, and you can listen for classic rock from the 60s to the 90s and call in your requests, too. I don't know who the host of that show is. They didn't say in the copy, but whatever. So
yes, and I've tried to overdose on rock and roll many times.
Do you see that light, Chris? Can you see it?
Can I see the light? Because, do you see the light?
Because that's...
No.
Okay.
I can barely... No.
Well, we are back on the phones and the fun, and we're going to say hi. You're on with the Motormouths.
Hi.
Tony!
How are you?
Very good. You got Ray in the studio, and we have Chris remotely with us as well. Chris Switzer is our second co-host for the day.
Hi, Tony. Cool. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
You're coming in loud and clear on this end, thankfully.
Oh, great. Good.
Excellent.
Did I call it a good time? Or?
Yeah, right on cue. Right on cue. Mm-hmm. That was perfect.
Excellent.
So, Tony, it's... Of course, we were talking about it, mentioning that your website is tonysparts.com, and you are we've been called Mopar Mouth Radio in the past because
that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. You know, because we go through these spates. Like we've had, you know, when this happened, we had Mark Warman on, then we had you on, we had the guys from the Mopar Club on who are listening today, as a matter of fact. And you know, it just kind of was like a whole bunch of Mopar stuff. So. here we are. We're just following that wave again.
Well, that's a good thing. Who's that other guy you mentioned? Mark who?
Yeah, Mark. Some guy is out west somewhere. I don't know. He's makes funny faces at a camera. He's like,
he said to say hello. I spoke to him yesterday.
Excellent. Everybody knows Mark Warman from Graveyard Cars, of course. Now in season 11. And, wow. Of course, Tony, that's how we found you, because you were a guest on his show. We saw you on camera.
Okay.
And said, hey, you know what? We got to get this guy on. So, you know, that's.
But I've been around a lot longer than that.
Yes. So give people your history for the people who don't know, please.
Well, I guess you could say Mopar's in my blood. You know, my dad, Bob, he's always been into Mopars. I mean, hell, he bought a new 63 Plymouth Sport Fury with a 383 four-speed Golden Commando. He raced a 62 Chrysler 300 in, like, a stock class. He also had an altered with a max wedge in it that ran nines back in the 60s.
Wow.
And, you know, he keeps cars a long time like I have. He has the only 1957 Chrysler C300 convertible that's a stick transmission.
Really?
Holy smokes.
You know, he had that since, I think, 72. He has a 32 Ford Roadster powered by a big block Mopar since the early 60s also. So that's where I got it from. So, you know, of course, I was always with him helping, working on cars, whether, you know, when I was small, just able to pump brakes and help him out. But being around the cars, my dad was a big influence. And 1977, I got a 1970 Roadrunner convertible. 383 four speed. Even though it was only seven and a half years old, it still had some rust issues because, you know, we're from upstate New York. Mm-hmm. And so it needed to be, you know, redone. We didn't really use the word restore back then on the cars because it wasn't like they do today where the whole car is on a rotisserie and they do everything. But you were still able to buy new fenders from Chrysler, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. So we got a couple new fenders for it. We got the last NOS convertible quarter panel, put that on one side and made some patches for the other side, and I still have the car today. We added some options like the air grabber hood and a couple other little things like that, but it was a bucket seat pistol grip console car. And, you know, like I said, that's really how I got into the parts business, was because of that car, because it was just a 8 3/4 open rear end. And one of the kids in my auto mechanics class had a 70 GTX 446 barrel that he was parting out at the time, because second gas crisis, the cars weren't worth a whole lot, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
So I went to buy the rear end and the leaf springs from him. He didn't feel like taking them out of the shell of the car, so my dad went up there with me, and we towed the car home and jacked it up. I took the rear end and leaf springs out and threw the body behind my dad's old body shop. And just by word of mouth, I ended up selling parts off the car that added up to more than what I ended up paying for the rear.
Isn't that great? And that's how it starts.
Absolutely, you know. So I did it part-time for many years, and, you know, would go to the English Town swap meets to sell off some parts, you know, buying and selling stuff. And I never imagined you could make a living at it. That's my only regret, that I never started doing it full-time earlier. It probably wasn't until the late 80s that I sort of was trying to make a career choice. I mean, I always made a decent salary, but I was sort of flim-flamming from, you know, doing towing a few nights a week or and then selling the parts on the side or what have you. It added up to a good salary, but it was never a 9-to-5 type job that I had. So at that point, I, you know, made sort of a decision I was going to go at it full tilt, and the more time I put into it, the more it would grow and grow. So, you know, at least where we are today, you know.
Now, what,
Tony, what was the catalyst? What made you drop the hammer and say, I'm going to do this full time? What led you to do that?
I didn't like most jobs. I don't know.
That's great.
You know, I don't have a college education behind me. You know, I went for a couple of years for business to a local college, like for an associate's degree, but that doesn't lead you into any kind of regular jobs. Just, mm-hmm. I don't know. College to me felt like 13th grade, and I just didn't really, I wasn't into school stuff at all. So this was something I liked and enjoyed, and you know, obviously the more time I put into it, the more I could make at it. So it seemed like a good career path.
Sure.
When was it that you moved down to Delaware, Tony? What year was that?
That was in the beginning of 95.
Oh, wow.
That was from Orange County, New York, right. Pretty much from when I was 6 years old till, again, about 95 when I was 32. And I had looked around upstate New York for a few years for either a house or a piece of property. I mean, I had, you know, I knew everybody. I grew up there. I mean, I had friends that were builders, for, you know, friends that were in real estate. And I just would be settling for, at the time, I would have been settling for what my limit was that I wanted to spend, or having to move further north, more away from New York City, which things got cheaper because, you know, property values went up because of the close proximity to, for people that would, commute every day. It was still an hour and a half drive to New York, but people would do that just because that's where they can make the money.
Right.
And, you know, New York's crazy with their taxes anyways, you guys know. So, I mean, when I moved at the time, a half an acre with a bi-level on it that my parents had, their taxes were $4,000 a year. Now it's well over 10.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Or I think when they moved, it was 10. They moved down here in 2000. And it's just crazy. It's really, you know, taxes are. And also, the property was about, you could say, about a third less here than what it would have cost up there. So if I was able to buy something for 100 here, comparable would have been 150 in New York. So because things were cheaper here and the taxes were, you know, practically free compared to, put it this way, a comparable place down here was $400 a year at the time, where it was $4,000 at New York.
Right.
You know, and when I would tell people what my taxes were, they go, "That's not bad a month." Mm-hmm. I'm like, "No, that's for the whole year."
Yeah, I know. You know, my wife and I now are getting close to ready to retire, and we're talking about relocating, and that's exactly the conversation. And I saw something in the Daily News today that I remember that paper, Tony. You remember that?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I know. I'm just busted. Something you always see the top, and of course the AARP magazine. You see the top five or six states to retire to. So, and I always wondered, like, what's at the bottom of the list? And in the Daily News today, they had an article of the top five or the bottom five states to retire to because of taxes, which I'd never seen that listed before. New York was not one of the bottom five, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, but anyway. So anyway, Mopar Parts, because I know, you know, motor parts in general, that's what people want to hear about. And I know Rich at Long Island Mopars is listening today, as well as the members. Something that jumped at me watching Graveyard Cars, and I asked this to Mark, and I kind of got the answer I expected because it came from his, you know, lexicon. But you come the other way at it. When we talk about the section of the car that holds the engine, I've always known it as a K-frame.
Absolutely.
And you've said K-frame. And now Mark has always says K-member. And
oh, okay.
I was trying to figure, like, I never got to look at a factory service manual. Is there a correct designation, or is it just local or regional?
Well, let me walk over. I'm going to put you on a wireless here. Can you still hear me okay?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Let me go over to
the library.
Well, I can do two things. I could grab a factory parts book, which I'll look at first.
This is what I do on Thursday nights, Chris. I'm playing in traffic. I'm always pulling stuff out of the library. Like, well, hold on, let me research that. What did you know it as, Chris? What lexicon did you use?
I have never heard K member before. Okay. I mean, I probably said that to someone in high school. You're a real K member, you know that? But that's about as close as I've ever come to using the term. But no, I've always known it as a K frame.
Okay, yeah, me too. And I don't know why.
Yeah.
I guess because it's part of the frame.
Well, there are so many, you know, accepted industry terms that, you know, aren't technically correct, you know, like motor or engine, you know, like one of those deals, you know.
No, it's the truth. It's the truth. But yeah, I'm sure Chrysler probably calls it some.
Oh, they're calling it
structural.
I'm sorry.
Engine structural part. K-12, 11,
I know my buddy Paul, you know, Mopar Paul, Pirate Paul, he's a K-member kind of guy. and I don't know why. I mean, maybe being a GM guy, maybe we picked up K-frame. I don't know. But anyway,
What they're actually calling it in the parts book is a cross member. Of course, not K. That's, you know, because of the shape of it. If you stood it up on the end, it looks like a letter K.
Right.
They're also calling what we call the lower radiator yoke a cross member. They're calling the torsion bar cross member. They're calling that a cross member. And then in the rear, where like the bumper would bolt up, they call that a cross member. Okay, now let me just go to the exact section because I'm looking at an illustrated page. But let me go to.
So leave it to Chrysler to confuse things even further.
Yeah, right.
Oh, geez, it's like, do you know where you look for a bumper jack in the parts book?
No, where?
Where?
In the frame section.
In the frame section. Okay.
I guess of course you do.
Because you're lifting up. Yeah, right? you can convolute logic to anything. You really can.
Oh, my gosh. I would look in the trunk section.
You have to be somewhat educated to, you know, with these parts. Not educated, just experienced. Mm. Here. Exactly what they're calling it is a front suspension cross member.
Okay.
Okay.
And
I'll buy that.
That's in there. Now, I have a what I call a factory crash book. It was printed by Mitchell, but it just does Chrysler stuff. And it's really easy to look up certain items in here. They're not going to have interior stuff, but it also groups a couple years together, so you get some interchangeability, and you also get updates as far as supersessions for part numbers.
Right.
Now, for the heck of it, let's see what they're calling it here. Yeah, 2 cross member front suspension. Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Same thing. Done. So.
All righty.
That solves that problem.
Well, I guess maybe it's a regional thing. Who knows? Something came up just this week, Tony, with a friend of mine down. He's in Tennessee now. He's got a nice fleet of Mopars, and he's having trouble with those orange ignition boxes, the ECUs. And apparently there was a switch when they were made or where they were made, and at some point in time they became real crap.
Yep.
So the question was... And he just bought online a tester, a Chrysler ignition tester. Is there a good way to do this on the bench to test those things?
Not that I've ever tried. I've seen those testers. I may even have one kicking around.
It's a switching transistor. It's the equivalent of a GM module is really all it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. That was just something I wanted to throw out to you. Because now, how reliable are the current brand of reproduction modules?
I didn't know there was a reproduction. I mean, I know Chrysler always had what they called the orange box,
right.
which was the standard one. And then they had the chrome box, which was more of a race one. I used to run that on like a high-performance street car. Then they were supposed to give hotter spark at a higher RPM. And then there was the race-only gold box.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I always... knew to carry an extra one in my glove box just in case.
Right.
It's just like the little the white porcelain.
The resistor.
Balance
yep.
Resistor,
the resistor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Always carry one in the glove box. That's for sure.
Well,
hey, Tony,
I've got to ask you about the resistor. Though, let me jump in for a minute. You can jump that and run fine.
Right.
You
don't have to have the resistor. So if you're in a jam, you could just get a piece of wire and jump them, and you know you'll go where you got to go with it. And same thing on the. It's easier to do on the 69 and older cars. You can also jump the voltage regulator. You'll just be overcharging, but if your regulator goes bad, at least it'll get you home kind of thing, you know?
Son of a gun. That's a good thing to know. I never knew that because I'm always thinking, oh, my God, it's a resistor. I'm going to fry wires if I jump this thing. So that's really good to know.
And sometimes, especially with electronic, if one of those is bad, it'll prevent you from starting. So just to do an elimination to know what it is or isn't, you could just jump those and see if you'll start.
You'll get it where
it goes to start, and then you let off the key, and then it doesn't.
Right.
It dies. Yeah.
So.
Mm.
So Chris, might as well drop on Tony the elephant that well not the elephant the behemoth that you're working on now in the Mopar. We'll tell him about it.
Tony, I have. I have a C body, and it's a 69 Chrysler. I think it started out life as a Newport because I know Chrysler is in its wisdom. It's a very early 69 car. It was built September 16th of 68. It's a Chrysler 300 convertible, but it's got a Newport interior. I don't know if anybody went as far as to change the front bumper on it and install the headlight covers and change the back bumper and put even put the 300 emblems on the back of this thing. But that's what I got.
Did you ever
check the VIN number? Yeah, and the VIN number is a C27. That's all I get.
No, you're missing the letter. It's either it's going to be CL or CM.
Oh, no, okay. this is just a C27.
Really?
I'll look again. I will look again, but I was pretty sure, because all it said was large Chrysler. That's all it pretty much said.
Yeah, because the second letter will tell you what it is. Like CL is Newport, CM is 300. You know, then you'll have, I'm not real good on the C-body cars. I could do all the other bodies, but, there might be a H or a P or an S, you know, for like a New Yorker. So
okay, I will take a look again, but I do remember just seeing a C and a 27, and it said large Chrysler convertible. 27 was the convertible designation. So I'll look.
Oh, another way to tell is that the 300s came standard with a 440.
That's the killer.
Yeah,
I have a 383, so it's got to be a Newport.
Well, that doesn't mean. I mean, you know, just an engine swap too, but. Really, the VIN will tell you, and it's gonna be that second letter that'll tell you whether it's a CM27 or CL27.
Well, you know, Mark will be proud. How about the data plate that's found on the inner fender? Is that
Well, of course, yeah, that too.
Right, yeah, right. Sure.
I know Mark is a stickler for those data plates.
Oh yeah, and it has it. The data plate is there.
Yeah.
But that's where I found the C27.
What's that?
Well, the VIN is. I have the VIN. I mean, it's a 10-digit number. I think it's a small number, smaller than the usual.
The engine call out should be on there as well, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one benefit we have over, you know, the GM guys that are, you know, need to find that tank sticker or, you know, all these other things to figure out if the car was a big block or small block. That's why there's so many big block vets today that never existed back then. We got the 5th digit in the VIN. So,
you know, and I got to
you know, the funny thing is.
Yeah.
Ray, I just got to show you this. This is.
Oh my God! I see it. Yes.
You see it, right?
Yes.
This is the data sheet.
Yeah.
I have the data sheet. I swear to you, Tony, this data sheet looks like it came out of a bowl of oatmeal.
It's like it came out of a shredder.
It did. Huh. It's
you mean the broadcast
disheveled sheet? Yeah, the broadcast sheet. I can't even tell you if I'm looking at it upside down or right side up. It's in pieces, and I do have to put it together. That's why I have it sitting here.
But the fender tag under the hood, the data tag there, that you know, that's metal. You know, it's like the size of a business card.
Oh, yeah. Right. Totally. But and that's the one where I found the C27.
You know, and it's funny, Tony, because I had, years ago, I had a 71 Challenger convertible. And I sold it. It was kind of rusty underneath. But of all the things, I found the broadcast sheet for that car. And yet the Pontiac I have that I've owned since 1975, it's a 65, I recently restored. I'm still in the process of finishing the restoration, but had the car nut and bolt. Everything that could come apart was apart. Never found the sheet on that car.
Nice thing about Pontiacs is, I don't know if they're still doing it, but there was a service. They have all the records for Pontiac. You go to PMD Cares, I think it's called Pontiac Motor Division Cares, and they'll give you a packet with every single bit of information and item that you need to know about the car.
Wow. Yes, that's Pontiac Historical Services. I bought that back in the 80s. Yeah, you're right. But again, that's it was amazing. Just kind of ironic that the car that I really wanted to find the paper on, no way.
Yeah, it disappeared.
And I'd owned it for most of its life, and the other one was, there it was, right under the seat.
But
I wish they had that for Mopars, you know, because that would just end so much BS with all the cars going on. And also, you know, it would just, that's it. The answer's right there, you know. But they do have the IBM cards available up until 1966, I believe. So you can, you know, check any of the cars 66 and older for how they were built.
Mm-hmm.
But it is amazing how the B-body cars and the Plymouth Satellites, Dodge Coronets, and all the midsizes, all of those cars get such they're in the limelight. They just shine and they're valuable. But when you go to the bigger cars, the C-bodies, people are like, "What? Demo Derby car? What?"
Smoking Joe Galoglia, right? Would you guys? A Monaco is also a C-body, correct?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, that's what I thought. Our buddy Christian had asked that, and I just wanted to let him know.
And
then you get some cars like a Fury. A Fury in 62-4 was a B-body.
Right.
65, it went back to being a big car.
Went back to a big car. Yeah, sure did. Sure did.
You know, they changed around with some of the names. You know, like, well, Polara. Polara 62-4 was a B-body.
Right.
Then
sure
Polara jumped up to the C-body in 65.
Tony, right. I got to tell you, Mark Warman just told me to tell you he's eating breakfast, but he's not having a Philly cheesesteak.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Now, that's something that goes on the show where he tried you all the time about Philly cheesesteaks, but aren't you more of a chicken parm guy?
I can't even imagine what starts to go on in his head. It just, the stuff just comes in and out, and whatever he likes at the moment just comes flying out of it, and then sometimes he runs with it, and people actually think I'm from Philadelphia.
I know. And I have to say, as soon as I saw that interplay on the TV, because we've done that on this show, quite. Chris and I were famous for that. I had to say, boy, Tony's from New York. Anybody, you got to be from New York to be able to take that kind of stuff, because it's like, all right, what do you got? You know, it's like, really? And believe me, you do get yours back in. You do very well.
the crew, the camera crew, and the local and the guys that work in the shop, they like when I come out. They go, they don't know enough to correct Mark, but you put him in his place a lot of times.
Right. And it's great having you out there, because now, like when you picked apart that Challenger convertible, just it's the last few episodes that have been on, it made me realize that the parts I have left over from my car are actually worth a couple of bucks, and I want to sell them. You know?
Anything convertible specific is good, you know. And, you know, Mark's trying to put value on other things, though, to be fair to the, you know, to the owner of the car. I was like, Mark, says nobody's going to want this. And you also got to remember, it takes time to take the cars apart and take the parts off them. It's not like, you know, I just sent them to you and you take them out of the box and you have it. No, I mean, and it's a pain in the neck to take apart an old rusty car, too, you know?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Tony, we just had a question asking if you'll be at Carlisle this year.
Oh, yeah, every year since the first year.
Okay.
Well, since the first year for the Chrysler event. I think that was around 1990-ish.
Right. Cool.
Yeah, this was actually my first year at Chrysler's at Carlisle. I went in July, and was it a show. Holy moly.
Oh, yeah, that is the hands-down best Mopar show on the planet. I mean, there's, you know, the Mopar Nationals, now it's just called the Nationals, but it's, you know... It has drag racing. Otherwise than that, it's not as organized. And they're sort of at the mercy of having an event one year at a racetrack. I mean, not to knock the Nationals crew, this part of the problem is they don't own the facility. They can't make it better. They can't gear it towards car shows, where the people at Carlisle, the reason why their events are so good, you know, 15, 20 weekends a year, they're a car show. So they can refine in one year what it would take another show 15 years to refine. But really, sometimes the other event promoters can't even do that because they don't own the facility.
So
that's why Carlisle is such a great place for swap meets, because it's a venue used only for automotive swap meets. So it's really great for that.
Right.
Mm. You know, say, and even for people that do like the drag racing, I think there's Beaver Springs Dragway not too far from there where, you know, some of the people go. But as far as displays and organization and the amount of vendors, I mean, gosh, the swap meets easily four times the size of the Mopar Nationals.
Wow.
That is amazing.
So speaking so about... go on, Scott. Yeah.
No, I was going to say, you've been... Tony, you've been busy with the... I'm looking at the video now of your collection that was recently sold. Some of them were sold, right?
Oh, nice.
Yeah, at the end of the day, four of them were sold, and one's coming back.
One's coming back, huh? Mind me asking, which one is coming back?
Oh, sure, the green Challenger RT convertible, original paint, unrestored car.
That's the one I liked.
I've had that since 99. Well, it's three of the cars I've had over 20 years.
Nice.
Wow. I mean, talk about, you know, it's so funny because I always talk about automobiles as investments, and you are the poster child for my argument that cars are valuable and cars are better than putting money in the stock market or putting money in the money market fund or a REIT or anything like that. Buy an old car and fix it up use it,
Chris,
and enjoy it.
No,
what?
No.
No, I'm getting...
Okay, I'm going to expose it. How old are you?
I'm a year younger than you.
Okay. Well, I'll be 57 later on this year. So I don't mind to say.
I'll be 56 later on. I'll be 56.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
The point I'm getting at is...
Tell me.
And see, I still have other old cars. It's, you know, I read on the internet, people, oh, selling the cars. Must need money. Must have to pay Mark for restoring his car. First of all, after those five are gone, I'll still have six. I'm not getting out or away from the cars. Motivation is I didn't have time to use them all. Yeah. I mean, the Green Challenger convertible, crazy story. I bought it from a friend of mine, Jim Penta, up in New Hampshire. Drove it home. Little sprucing up to it, like as far as putting, like if a hose or wires were replaced, I put, you know, correct original ones on the car, so it's really more true to form to being a survivor, where, you know, typical most survivors' maintenance items get replaced. Well, I put them back to original, so that kind of sprucing up stuff. And I went to go through motor vehicle to register it, and the brakes pulled to one side. We fixed that, and I never went through again. I have never registered and driven that car.
Wow.
And there's some cars like the Daytona. That was a full-scale model. It's not a vehicle you use, you know. There's just cars I haven't used in years. I just don't have the time, don't have the accessibility to them. And also, the last few years in Delaware, we've had unseasonably hot, humid summers where it's not even enjoyable to go out. And when you go out in an old car with vinyl seats, whether it's convertible or not, you go out for a joyride. You don't go out to be sweating and fighting the weather, you know?
Right.
So pretty much July and most in August, you pretty much can't drive. So you got spring and fall.
Right.
So I wasn't able to use them as much as they should be or that I would have liked to. And, you know, another thing to look at, too, is well, I brought up our age. There's not many people younger than 50 into these cars.
That's
into
true.
The muscle cars.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying nobody, but it really drops off hard.
It does.
And what I've seen happening, and I'm sure you guys have too, some of the older fellas more into it, for nicest term I could put is are aging out.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? So it's going to be either they pass away or they realize it's time and they start selling off their stuff. So I sort of feel there's going to be a lot of stuff out there for sale, and the audience to buy isn't going to be as big.
The other thing I see at the local cruise nights, and I saw it watching Barrett Jackson this past weekend. Older guys building 8,000-9,000 horsepower cars, and what are they doing? And they're driving them at 25 miles an hour because the guy's 70 something years old. Like, yeah, you fulfill the dream, you got the money, but leave it. Now the next guy is going to. There's going to be a whole crop of our kids and stuff that are going to have really fast cars.
Yeah, they just want to say, I got 700 horsepower.
Right.
But
right.
never use it,
right.
you know.
Right.
I see that all the time. And also, too, like I said, look around at the audience there at Barrett Jackson. They're all, you know, they're not young anymore, you know.
Right.
No, that's because they have the money. And that's the thing. We're talking about $100,000 a pop for any one of these cars. And who, what kid in their 20s or 30s or even 40s has that kind of spendable cash?
Well, they're younger people. Well, I say younger, the ones in their 40s more, that can and do have the money. There's not many people even in the 50s can afford buying cars like that either.
Right.
Yeah. But you're talking to two of them.
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, the point is that it's just they're buying the late 70s Trans Ams that the regular muscle car guys aren't. That's a younger crowd.
Yeah, sure.
Also, I think it's crazy how these, I don't know who's buying the VW buses and those Broncos and Blazers and Chevy pickups for,
crazy
money. And, you know, it's like I know people had them when they were younger, but they weren't like their show trucks or anything or you know.
Yeah, they were beaters.
I don't know.
Yeah, we drove them. They were just beaters. They were just
I mean, the muscle cars was something that, you know, it was a cool car to have to go out to race or, you know, make the scene with. But the trucks really didn't fall into that back then.
That's right.
No, never did.
Not maybe in Texas, but not here. Right.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Very true.
That is true.
We're down to like maybe 10 minutes left in the show. I want to have you tell us, if you can, what products are, you know, what new products you have at Tony's Parts and what's in development?
Okay, sure. Let me see. Some of the newest stuff we came out with is, let me get this here. We came up with 70 Roadrunner quarter panel scoops. I mean, they're used on GTXs. They're used on all Superbirds. And a lot of times they're missing, they're broken. Or if somebody wants to clone a 70 Satellite or Belvedere to look like a Roadrunner, they need those. So that was one of the new items. Also, we make power steering shaft couplers. It's the part at the end of the steering shaft that connects the shaft to the steering box. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why they've become so hard to come by, but they're missing from a lot of columns, and they're also needed when you want to convert from manual steering to power, which a lot of people are doing today. Okay. Now, you can make a manual steering shaft work in a power steering application. The thing is, the shaft is a couple inches shorter. And think, well, how do you make a shaft shorter? Well, it's a two-piece shaft. It's a male-female shaft held together with a plastic shear pin. And if you take a hammer and you whack the end of the shaft in, you'll break the plastic shear pin, and you know the shaft will compress a little bit, and then you could put our coupler on the end and use it in a power steering car and say, well, geez, now it's not held firmly together. Right. Don't worry about it. Right. It's not going anywhere. You've just taken away some of the crush of it. And the reason why they had the columns being collapsible like that is because in case you're in a front-end accident, the steering shaft doesn't come up and, you know, poke you in the head with it.
Right.
It'll collapse inside of each other. So you just lose a couple inches of, you know, the collapsibility of it. So that's a, you know, that's a popular thing. What we have in the works is, and these are pretty close, the 71 to 4 B-body A-pillar trims that go from the dash up to the ceiling, to the roof of the car. They're in transit right now, so they'll be in shortly. This has been a long project, but we're getting closer on the 70 and 71 big block high-performance exhaust manifolds. Let me see. 71 to 4 B-body with the rally dash. Another thing that's real hard to find are the knobs for the headlight and the washer switches, and we're making those. They're getting pretty close.
Well, we used to fill our pockets with those in the junkyard raids.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Totally.
Also, on the side of 70 and early 71 cars, they use a hinge cover on the bucket seats. It's a metal hinge cover with a button that's in them, and a lot of times the buttons fall out. Mm-hmm. So we're making the buttons so that way you can repair the hinge covers that are missing the buttons, which we have dozens of them here that we have the hinge cover, but the button fell out.
Right.
And here's an item that we used to offer, and then the company closed up that we were having making them, so we're making them again, is the 7071 big block high performance exhaust manifold heat stove.
Oh, yeah.
And wow. You know, they're pretty close too. And a couple other items that are good. I'll save the best one for last, but we're making the 68 and 9 Roadrunner bench seat emblems. There's 8 of them per vehicle. It's really a complicated part. It's a 3-piece part. There's a backing, then that's wrapped with vinyl, and then there's a chrome cover on top of that.
Wow.
I know. You can fit 10 of them in your hand and still not see them if you make a fist, but they're complicated to make.
Tony, what does it look like? What does that emblem look like?
It's about 3 inches tall and half an inch wide, if that. Like I said, it's sort of rectangular shape, but it tapers smaller at the top and bottom. And and then it has an insert with vinyl that would be the color of your seat.
Uh-huh.
Got it. Yes. Okay.
And then we're doing the 68 and 9 GTX and 69 Carnet RT wood grain dash trim set.
Nice.
One company makes a reproduction radio bezel, but it doesn't match either one. If you put it in the car, it would stand out like a row of thumbs, so I don't even know why that was made. So we're making the 3-piece sets. They'll be interchangeable with originals, but we're going to be selling them as the 3-piece sets. And believe it or not, the 68 and 69 are a little bit different color in wood. And also the radio bezel in 68 doesn't have lettering on it, but the 69 bezel has lettering. So, you know, these minute differences you got to address.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I guess the last item, it may not sound like that sexy of a part, but it's very universal and very much needed. On all cars with like a vent window on it, there's what they call a glass channel slide that rides in the front of the glass, so that way the glass isn't rubbing against the metal channel. And it has a slight curvature to it, just like all the glass does. As much as you think, like in a Roadrunner or a Dart, that the door glass is flat, it's truly not. It has a little bit of a bow to it. And they were available from Chrysler up until maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years ago tops. And they weren't cheap from Chrysler, but it's this long U-shaped plastic channel with felt on the inside, but against the glass, and it had a couple holes in it, and came with some plastic T-shaped
The barbed clips.
Guides.
Yeah.
Right, with the metal pins that go through them.
Right, right.
Well, there is a reproduction out there, but the problem is with the reproduction, it's straight, and you can't get it to fit onto the glass, right? And by the time you make it fit onto the glass, it cracks and it breaks, and it's not really doing the job right, and people were going crazy over the factory ones. I mean, put it this way, NOS original glass slides now probably sell between $300 and $400 a pair.
Wow.
but, yeah, so that's why we're looking to... you know, to make those, and they'll be tremendously cheaper, like a quarter of that. So,
let me ask you: do you have Pierre Paul needs to know a rear seat emblem for a '69 Plymouth? Is that
I may have one. I'd have to check out in the shop, but yeah, we've saved those off a CD. Yeah, that's like a 4 or 5 inch tall emblem that goes in the middle of the back seat.
Okay, I'll have them send you an email or something.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, we might be able to help with that.
Excellent. All right, well, Tony, we are at the end of the show. We only got a couple of minutes left. We're going to have to scoot out of here. And we thank you for coming on. Thank you for taking time on a Sunday to spend with us.
No, thank you for having me. It's great. Let me know, and we'll do this again sometime.
Absolutely. I'll reach out. We'll get you back again. It'll be quicker than last time. And when you talk to Mark, tell him to get back to me and nail down a date, because he's terrible with that.
I know.
right. Thanks, Tony.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
have
Tony.
A weekend.
All right. So long.
All right.
That was Tony D'Agostino from Tony's Parts in Maryland. Check it out, tonysparts.com. Chris, yeah, we burned through all of our other breaks and all of our other stuff, so we're...
Yeah, I think we did.
We're just having... you know what? Let me just play one quick promo here, because I always promised I would. It's a good buddy of ours. I like to take care of him and mention stuff. So let me just play this quick promo, and we'll be back in about 42 seconds, okay?
On
90.3 WHPC.
Shake off the realities of the day, broaden your musical horizons, and embrace the diversity every Monday afternoon at 5 for 2 hours of Revelations. The show offers a potently unique collection of music with an emphasis on themes and rock rarities, an occasional tour de force of blues and soul mixed with compelling sets of folk and folk rock. I'm Steve Kay, and I've got the perfect soundtrack for your drive home every Monday afternoon at 5. On Revelations, right here on the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC.
All right. Thank you, Steve. And you are back still with the end of the show. Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer. And we're kind of wrapping it up here. There you are, Chris. I'm sorry. There's your slide right there. Yeah, we're going to follow up at some point with Mark Warman. We'll get him on and talk about season 11 of Graveyard Cars.
It's so funny because just real fast, looking at the cars that Tony has here on Facebook, it's amazing. And it's such a contrast to the C-bodies that I see usually on Facebook that are usually in open fields that are covered in dirt and dust and leaves and are usually rusty. And because they have to be the best bargains out there. If you want a Mopar that you can afford, get a big Mopar.
Right.
Get a big C-body, because they're truly the closest you're going to get. You can get the greatest one possible for in the $10,000 range.
Yeah.
And compared to looking at like a midsize or a smaller Mopar, it's just I'm championing the C bodies now. I'm trying those big boat cars are a gas. They're just a ton of fun. Yes to them.
I think the takeaway for that is make sure it's as complete as possible before you pull the trigger, right? Because parts are a little hard to find.
Oh, that is for sure, yeah.
All right. Well, what wasn't hard to find was Avatar A here, Avatar 4, because we're out of here. Chris, we're wrapping it up. We'll be back again next week.
Sounds good. Don't follow us home.
Don't follow us home. We'll see you then. Motor Mouth Radio 90.3 HPC. Bye.
Bye.